He was born on February 3rd, 1937. He is a Swiss citizen, Billy Edward Albert Meyer, a source of incredible photographs of UFOs, which he presents in his support of his claim that he is in contact with extraterrestrial beings. But this individual, this man, has far more information than just UFOs and ET visitations. In a moment, Michael Horn, the American authorized media representative for Billy Meyer, joins us. And by the way, a new DVD out called And They Listen. We'll talk about that too on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. And let me tell you a little bit about Michael Horn. Michael is the authorized American media representative for the Billy Meyer contacts, which he has researched since 1979. Michael is a writer, producer, director of the award-winning new film, And They and Did They Listen, as well as the co-producer of the new documentary, As the Time Fulfills, which presents an abundance of ironclad, accurate scientific evidence that authenticates the Billy Meyer case. He's the writer, co-producer of the award-winning feature-length documentary, The Silent Revolution of Truth, as well as the writer, producer, and narrator of the DVD, The Meyer Contacts, The Key to Our Future Survival. Always a pleasure to bring Michael Horn back on Coast to Coast. Hey, Michael, we've missed you. How have you been?
Hi, George. I've been busy. It's been a very, very busy time. I mean, with everything that's unfolding in the world, of course, it relates quite a bit to what I speak about, which is in the Meyer case. And I think we've probably done a total of something like, I don't know, 15 shows together.
At least way back. My gosh.
Yeah, at least. Over, what's 13 years, and I know that at times you've had me on more than once a year, so it's quite a bit, you know. And each time we've moved forward to try to bring some clarity to the highly controversial Billy Meyer UFO case.
Billy is 78 years old. How is he doing? What's going on with him?
Well, I'll tell it to you just as I know it at this point. I was in Switzerland in May and June, parts of both months, not all of that time. That was my 15th trip to visit with Billy and the other people that, you know, are involved in this. And at that point, we did a few, you know, little film clips on some very pertinent information. And while we were sitting there, I was kind of a bit in awe of the fact that I knew that Billy had a very bad fall and bruised some ribs. They weren't sure if they were bruised or broken. I think they turned out to be just badly bruised. And it was about 7 days prior to a heart valve replacement operation. So he's quite a stoic person. I mean, he just doesn't indulge in self-pity or whining or drawing attention to things. He just carries on. It's a kind of an inspiring thing not to have to suffer, but to know how to handle those things gracefully and to do your work despite discomfort.
He was the victim of some assassination attempts, wasn't he?
22 to date.
22?
Yeah, and you know, it's such an outrageous number, and then people, of course, it almost makes it hard to accept that it could be true, but I've spoken to witnesses to 14 of the attempts. I've seen one of the bullet holes in the window myself. They've left it in one of the windows in a shed, just kind of as, well, you know, if you want to look, here's what they try to do. And in the very beginning of all that drama, the Pleiaren extraterrestrials, the people that Billy claims he's been meeting with for 73 years since he was a child, they protected him a bit in the beginning, and then they told him, look, you're going to have to, you know, protect yourself here as best you can, because we're not always going to be able to be around when crazy people want to eliminate you. So he has to be careful still to this day.
My gosh, that's amazing. Who do you think wants to do him in?
Well, the what's the right term? You know, the consensus at this point is that the people who tried to do him in are a mixture of people from intelligence agencies, some people with very strong religious beliefs, and other people who just are troubled by the idea that there could be people from another world coming and they just, you know, can't quite handle it. Now, you know, a lot of the cynics and skeptics will say, well, you know, if it was me, I could kill this guy. You know, how come they, it's a strange thing about human beings that we want to, you know, kind of show that we could be more perfect in eliminating somebody's life than, you know, others, and that it must be a hoax because he's still alive. So we've dealt with these questions, and sometimes I've sat around and talked briefly with people there about it. You know, they just shake their heads as to this kind of thinking, because for them it's very real. In one case or two cases, there were people standing next to Billy that could have been killed too. And they were just, you know, circumstances.
And Michael, as we get into the current work, but for a lot of people who are brand new to the show who are saying, who the heck is Billy Meier? Would you go back a little bit and tell us what happened and what had been going on with him?
Sure, I'll try to give you the Cliff Notes version or what have you. Billy Meier is a now 78-plus-year-old man who claims that ever since he was a 5-year-old boy in Switzerland, that he's been meeting with, face-to-face voluntarily, meeting with people who are from another world, and that they have tutored him, taught him, they have taken him not only throughout our own solar system, but into the vast, deep reaches of outer space. They have given him information on scientific and world event-related information in advance of these events occurring. Sometimes these are presented as, if you will, prophecies or predictions, and other times they are in the context of conversations where they're simply discussing something, and they say, well, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And Meier, in the mix of all of this, is the person who, since 1964, has been taking what are the most stunningly clear, remarkable, and still irreproducible, UFO photos.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they're unparalleled to this day.
And this was at a time, Michael, that we didn't have Photoshop. You couldn't really get away with that kind of work. And, you know, his photos have been looked at by Hollywood people.
Yep.
They can't figure it out.
Well, George, this is the funny thing about it. We've had Hollywood special effects people vet those films, and the assessments have stood the test of time. The photos and films and other physical evidence was also examined, analyzed, and authenticated as far back as 1980 and 81. And just last year, 3 independent analyses of some of Meier's most controversial photos were done, and they were authenticated. And here's a difference that people might appreciate. When Meier's photographic evidence was first being examined around 1980 and 81, they were using what was the state-of-the-art equipment for that time. And these were big, clunky computers and fancy equipment that took up, you know, whole tabletops and really big stuff. And the funny part of it was that Meier himself never would have had access to use this kind of equipment, very, you know, for the day, sophisticated, to hoax his stuff. Well, when you fast forward 30, 40 years and into last year, now we're using state-of-the-art digital technology that he certainly didn't have access to, and they're authenticating the photos and the films. And because that the analysts who did it state the protocols and the tools that they used, from Google Earth down to 3D imaging and computer modeling stuff that is beyond my knowledge, but they list it there for anybody that wants to do these analyses themselves. So we no longer need I'm the expert in this area. That we needed that 30, 35 years ago when nobody had access to that equipment except specialists. You see what I'm saying? So nowadays, anybody can now test out Meier's photos for themselves. And we even have one online, a 35-millimeter photograph. You can drop it into Photoshop and just play with the contrast and the brightness and what, you know, some skeptics have said it's just a gold model against a black curtain. It shows a large craft hovering over a graveled road and a grassy hillside. It's mind-boggling, but, you know, everybody's got to decide whether they want to do this themselves or not.
How does he feel about the fact that this has happened to him?
Well, I think at this stage of his life, it's just, you know, it's his life, and he doesn't think anything of it. I remember when we did that film called The Silent Revolution of Truth, that we asked Billy about the loss of his left arm, because when he was 17, they told him, In about 10 years, you're going to lose your left arm. It's your destiny. We can't interfere with that, and you'll have to get used to it, you know? And I go, okay.
Oh, my. So,
yeah, and in the film, he talks about the fact that it was, I think it was in the film, where he says, you know, about a year before I lost my arm, I was in India on a beach, and there was a family there, and I saw the man, the father, he only had one arm, and I said, oh, I'm only going to have one arm at a certain point fairly soon. And he said, then I pushed it back out of my mind so I wouldn't dwell on it. And he said, you know, I would not change anything because of what I've learned from this experience. Now, that's something that would be very hard for people to say, oh, yeah, bring that on. I really want to learn something from having my arm literally ripped off my body. You know, no thanks.
No, not at all. And, you know, Michael, if somebody were to say to you, you know, you are going to get in a very serious car accident in 6 years, you know, you would tuck that away. And let's say that they were great prophets. And so you knew this was going to happen. So you take steps coming up to that sixth year of, let's say, not driving at that date that they say it was going to happen. And so you avoid driving a car, and then you get hit by a car walking across the street. I think prophecy is inevitable. It can't be changed. I don't think it can be changed.
Well, prediction, you're right on this one. Predictions, in their distinction, prediction can't be changed. Prophecy is the warning. They gave it to him as a prediction. They said, this is a certainty. You will lose your arm. And what they also told him, and this was one of many things, now not all were perhaps that, you know, traumatic, but they would tell him certain things that would happen or certain people, and they said, you know, we tell you this so that you will know, but you must not, based on your knowing, you must not alter this event. You must not try to avoid it. And if you want to back out of your role, that's one thing, but if you are going to walk this path, there are certain things, based on the laws of cause and effect, that will come your way, and that you must endure, and no one should be any the wiser for it. So these are things that, and I tell people, this is nothing to be believed. This is simply according to the information in the case. I can't prove that stuff. We can prove other stuff. In my, you know, in my context, I can say, look, beyond a reasonable doubt, beyond any doubt, we can put all this on the table, and, you know, 1, 2, 12 reasonable people are going to say, yes, that rings true, that's authentic, that would be proof. But proof is still within the, you know, the mind and the determination of each individual
right.
that considers evidence and information.
Michael, would you say that he is enlightened?
I think that that's a term that we, it's one of those terms, if you, you know, pardon me for saying it this way, but we've gotten a lot of terms from religion and New Age stuff and all of that. And enlightenment is then in these contexts, it's thought of as an event, and somebody, well, they're enlightened, and there's this, you know, light bulb around their head, or they've got their aura blasting all the time. I think the truth about enlightenment is that it's a progressive thing that occurs many, many times in everybody's life. We get enlightened. We gain more knowledge. We gain another level of plateau, a status in terms of knowing more about some things. But there's no stagnant thing. There's no condition of enlightenment that, well, that's it, you know, have a nice day, we're done. Evolution demands that we keep going and going and going. If the material in the Meyer case is true, and again, a lot of this you just have to reason, you know, yourselves, folks, but we have an extremely long period of evolution as human beings, unfathomably long, through many, many, many different lifetimes that we don't, for the most part, 99.9% remember, and we're different personalities, but it's part of evolution. So someone that we might call enlightened in 600 AD or 1200 AD or 1900, you can see that if you look back, a seemingly enlightened person might just be considered, well, he seems to be a, you know, a bright philosopher or something like that. So there's no stagnant, you know, destination. And this is something it would help us to get away from, because we project so much outside of ourselves on, you know, gods, angels, saints, saviors, masters, gurus. And the key, the core of the Meyer case, is complete self-responsibility. The fact that we are in the world and the trouble that we're in is that this has not been taught. We've always been looking outside of ourselves. We've been conditioned to do it. So you know, enlightened masters, that'd be another obstacle. You know, there's that old saying, if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him. I don't think it's a good idea that people took that literally, trying to shoot Meyer 22 times. But
yeah,
the idea is, don't give away your power and your authority outside of yourself.
Is Billy still being visited by these ETs?
Oh, yeah. He still meets with them regularly. Now, some of the work that they do over there pertains to translating texts or books and trying to get things right, you know, quote unquote, so the meanings, in cases where they're ancient documents or cases where they're trying to go from German to English. So that is done very often with Meyer sitting with one of his friends there who helps him, and then the Pleiaren are above the center, they're in a craft, and Meyer has the ability to communicate with them, again, according to the information case, telepathically, so that when they're saying, okay, you need to correct this or that, then he turns to someone like Bernadette or Marianne or somebody and says, okay, now, you know, here's where we replace it with that. Now, Meyer does a lot of that himself because he studies languages. He still does. He's, you know, he speaks Greek and German, and he used to speak in English more, but he doesn't like the language. So if I go there, I have to really do a quick, you know, catch-up course every time in my poor German, you know, and then he'll relent a little bit when I'm really blubbering and stuttering for words. But this is, you know, it's a very mundane thing. People don't realize it. It's not a glamorous thing at all. I mean, sure, he's had experiences that are literally out of this world, but some of the material that you can read is boring because they're talking about the most nitty-gritty aspects of his doing his work in concert with other people he works with to get it out into the world.
He's got, what, four children? Are they still all with us?
He has three natural children, four natural children, two partners.
Four.
And he has two stepsons.
I wonder what they think of Dad. What do you think?
Well, I can tell you, I know one of them, fairly, of all the people I know in his family, I know one, Atlantis, who's, you know, loves his father for sure. He's got another son, Methuselah, who hates his father. All of them.
His name's Methuselah?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's why he hates his father.
Right. Dad, what did you do? You laid that book on my
You gave me that name.
You know, well, you know, they've got some little far-out names. Of course, you know, we've got some pretty far-out names in various aspects of our own culture here, but I'll leave that one.
Methuselah.
He claims he was the worst father in the world, so the skeptics wanted to jump on the whole thing, and so, you know, he was complaining about Billy, and then they said, well, so it's a fake, the case. He said, oh, no, I've seen the ships too, but my dad's an SOB, you know, he's a bastard.
I wonder what my son would call me if I named him Methuselah.
Yeah,
I named him Jonathan, but can you imagine Methuselah Nori?
Well, the other
just doesn't have the ring.
His name is Atlantis, so there are some strange names.
My gosh!
And Atlantis.
And Michael, hold on for a second. We're going to take this break, and we're going to come back and talk about your new works, the film, of course, and Did They Listen? And then you've got a documentary as well as The Time Fulfills, and the situation that has occurred in Paris has a Billy Meyer connection. I'll explain that when I come back. And welcome back to Coast, Michael Horn with us. And again, he is the American media representative for the Billy Meyer contacts. Billy Meyer, of course, is the 78-year-old Swiss citizen who has been the source of photographs and ET visitation since he was a little boy. And Michael, you've got some new developments now in this case. Want to share them with us?
Yes, I do, George. Thank you. One of the things is that I just came out today with a new film in addition to the ones that, you know, are normally announced connected to my work. But I came out with one called When Truth Prevails. And this is a film that kind of documents briefly and then shows how I got to present the Meyer case just about a week ago at NAU, Northern Arizona University. I have tried for many, many years to bring the Meyer material.
Michael, I can barely hear you. You sound muffled.
How's this, George? How's that?
Okay, that's better.
Okay, I had my hand in the front.
Don't do that to me.
I'm not a night owl, George. I'm really bad.
Okay.
So for many years, I tried to get into universities or colleges here and got stonewalled. And one of the things, my film, And Did They Listen, was banned, actually, at Arizona State University. They refused to let it be seen, even though I have a former NASA aerospace engineer and the most recent director of operations from Orbital Launch Systems willing to come on stage with me, both vouching for the authenticity of the case. So it was very, very frustrating, and I was at a skeptics event in March. I went to an all-day skeptics event up here in Flagstaff, and I wanted to see presentations, and I had a chance to get up and tell people that, you know, I was on both sides of the fence on things, and I represented some very unusual material. I wanted to interview people. And during that, you know, whole day-long event, there were two very good presenters. Actually, a number of them were pretty good because they had things I could, you know, really respect in terms of critical thinking. And one man was a man named Ray Hyman, who's, you know, like a world-class skeptic, a legend, a friend of, you know, James Randi's and all that. And he actually did come over. This is the first of the really big-name skeptics to come over and look at Meyer's UFO photos, and we filmed it. And we have that on this film. Then there was another professor there, another skeptical professor, and he had a great presentation. He said, he tells his students he doesn't, you know, want them to bring him beliefs. He wants facts, et cetera, et cetera. I looked around for the guy. He was gone. Serendipitously, I meet him several months later. He says, hey, you know, you're excited about whatever you got, but I'm a tough nut to crack, so don't give me, you know, crazy stuff, no evidence. To make that part of the story a lot shorter, it was his invitation that brought me into NAU. He said, my class has to see what you have, because he's been looking at all the evidence. So we documented this and filmed the presentation and all this stuff. And in that presentation, I also have a clip from a DVD that you mentioned, which is The Meyer Contacts, The Key to Our Future Survival, mm-hmm. from 2004, in which we point out that Meyer foretold that there are Islamic attacks coming against France and all of Europe. So this is where we segue into why this is important. You know, I'll just do a quick thing on this. There's a wonderful woman named Lana Marconi who put out a film called The Resonance. They just had their debut up in Canada. She interviewed me in June, and she called me up. She said, you know, on Saturday we're debuting the film, and she said, you know, I went over it, and you're foretelling, you tell Billy's information about the coming Islamic attacks 4 months before they occurred. And I said, well, you know, it's just what he wrote about. So I can give you, if you want, I mean, I can give you the specific sentences from...
I'd love to hear. Yeah, please, go ahead.
Okay, this is from 58, and this is sentence number 83 in a rather long document, in which, by the way, he foretold the two U.S. wars with Iraq, AIDS, the fall of the Berlin Wall, and a dozen other things.
Now, so, is this told to him, or are these his prophecies?
These are prophecies that he presented in this letter, but he also notes that he got information from being tutored by the Playar, and so some is his, some is theirs.
Okay.
So what he says here is this, and it will be that fanatical Islamists carry out bloody revenge on the distant descendants of the Christians for their earlier crusades when they accomplish their deadly and destructive acts through irrepressible terror all over the world. 1958.
That's amazing.
Now,
wow.
Yeah, because just after the terrible attacks in Paris, some spokesman for the ISIS or the IS, whatever they're calling it, talked about this is for the French crusaders. I mean, this is what's so powerfully strange about a lot of Meyer's stuff, that the same words will come up and people will express the things that he put in writing. But here, jump to 1981.
Okay.
Paris will be destroyed. Well, actually, it starts off this way, just in case anything pops up in the news. Italy and France will be shaken due to revolutionaries who murderously and by arson destroy every order. Paris will be destroyed from within and burnt down. The inhabitants themselves are those who lay Paris into rubble and ashes via murder, arson, and revolution, while Italy also falls due to massacres, 1981. Now, there's more here. Now, I'm going to tell you, let's go back, because a lot of people say, well, Paris hasn't been burned, huh? That's why you have prophecies and predictions. Prophecies, these are from prophecies, hoping that people will act,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll march right to the progress. Okay.
Or it's so then, or it's to be.
Or it's going to occur. Yeah. And in 87, Meyer wrote, and it will be that the fanatics of Islam will rise up against the countries of Europe, and all will shake and quiver, and the fanatics and warriors of Islam will retain their power for a long time. France will not only be invaded by the aggressors from the outside, but will also be conquered from within as a result of collaborative forces and other forces. This can be envisioned as being the many foreigners of a different religion living in France at that time, and specifically Islam, which will be this force working from within.
Michael, that's amazing. It really is.
Yes, and in November of, by the way, also in 1995, they again reiterated that this is going to be a rather sad thing when people who are radicals in that religion, not all Muslims, obviously, but that's why he says Islamists, the fanatical Islamists will carry out bloody revenge. In November of last year, the most unprecedented thing I've ever received from Billy was a kind of a call for a petition stating that, according to the play, Aaron, unless we have a true international force drawn from all countries of at least 300,000 troops, 300,000 well-armed troops to go against the IS now, because as of November of last year, they said they already have over 100,000, you know, crazy psychotic.
Right, scattered all over there.
And they said you have to go and confront them and take them, you know, into, if they do not surrender, then they have to be eliminated, because when people are radicalized that way, they cannot be reasoned with. And Billy, I told you I was in Switzerland in May and June.
That's
I filmed
right.
Billy at that point. I asked him about ISIS notes. He said, this is going to be worse than anything from Al-Qaeda or anything. He says it's unprecedented. Unless people come together with a strong military force, we could be sent back to the Dark Ages.
Now,
they don't mince words.
Michael, does he believe that if this force of 300,000 is put together, that these fanatics will be defeated?
That is the only way that, in terms of what he's saying, otherwise the fulfillment of the prophecies is this, like I read, you know, and it will be the fanatics of Islam will rise up against the countries of Europe and all will shake and quiver. There's other stuff in here about what's going to happen to the West as well. And he had foretold the mass migration problems. He wrote recently a whole article calling out the unrightness, if I may, you know, make that word, of the boat people type of thing and all the mass migration, saying, listen, people have to be humane, but you have to understand, when people pile into boats, they're paying thousands of dollars each, and they should be investing themselves in correcting their own countries and in putting their lives, not trying to become economic, be benefited by other countries that have worked hard to put things together. Don't bring what doesn't work in fanatical religion and all the rest of this to another country and then try to inflict that when you're fleeing from it.
Well, here's an interesting statistic for us. The Iraq invasion in 2003 had 309,000 coalition forces. So that's an interesting number that he believes you need almost the same amount that we all sent in, and that included the United States, the United Kingdom, Australia, Poland, and those that were in Iraq that joined forces with us, 309,000. He's saying we need that same number to take care of these fanatics.
Well, also, you know, look, let me give you all the shoes that drop on this. He said unequivocally, had the U.S. not gone in and destabilized Iraq, we wouldn't be faced with this today. Saddam Hussein, you know, the lunatic that he may have been, would never have allowed the IS to gain power. And so we have, in our policies, we've played a part. And this is something, you know, people don't want to hear this, but there's a very neutral, immutable law. It's called cause and effect. And this is, we create either for good or for ill, and prophecies and predictions are based on those laws of cause and effect. The people who are, let's say, true prophets or and have the ability to foresee, look into the future, have an ability to perceive causes leading to effects, leading to causes leading to effects. And this is what is happening in our world. We have things that, you know, they're just roaringly not good. You know, I don't know how else to put it. We've got to come together. And look, what we're doing, however people feel about the Russians and Eastern Europe, Meyer also said this because it's in the prophecies that Russia is going to invade this country if we keep up with what we're doing to provoke Russia. So these things will upset people who say, well, you know, we're only the good guys always. We've got to realize, we're on a little speck of cosmic lint, and if we can't get this straightened out with human beings everywhere, we're all going to suffer.
Okay, now, Michael, without the 300,000 troops, without that commitment from forces, which would have to include Russia as well as the French and us, what will happen based on Michael's prophecy?
Meyer's prophecy, not mine. I go back to the sentence that the fanatics and warriors of Islam will retain their power for a long time. See, George, this here's where I really, in a way, it's a pleading to people that, you know, listen, you have a vast audience, a pleading to you as well. If we understand, if we can reason our way through and determine that this man, these contacts, this information, these folks, that this is an authentic thing, difficult as it may be to imagine, but we don't have to imagine because we can test and test and test. When you've got stuff like this where I'm already putting this in a DVD 10 years ago, and I've read this material in 1986 warning about these attacks in France, people have got to go, well, wait a minute, somebody's trying to what? Help us. This is why I called that DVD of mine in 2004, The Key to Our Future Survival. They're not trying to do light shows for us. All this stuff with aliens and all the rest of this, we've got to get past it. Some stuff may be from outer space. Most of it's secret military. We're not going to be meeting aliens. They don't carry their lunch trays under area, you know, in the desert there in Area 51. This is what a human race that's more advanced than we, who've gone through their own millennia of grief and it surmounted, are saying, we'd like to help you to help yourselves. We can't do it for you. These are the things coming your way from your creations as human beings on Earth.
Did anybody listen to Billy Meyer in 58, 81, 87, 95? Did anybody listen to him?
No, hence, you know, I called the film before the new one. I called that film, you know, I said the people were warned, and did they listen? And it seems like not enough people, not people who were powerful enough. Look, I have been just livid with organizations like MUFON and SETI, to whom I have sent for years this information. If I've got a skeptical professor with the integrity and honesty to say, hey, this is worth having my students look at and decide for themselves, don't you think an organization that's set up for, you know, having people chase lights in the sky for 45 years should at least investigate it? Don't we think that search for extraterrestrial intelligence, you know, I've sent stuff to Seth Shostak for years.
Sure.
Look, we've got to get pulled together on this. If this is real, SETI should come forward. MUFON should come. We all should come forward and say, look, unless we can prove that this is wrong, but how long do we want to go before all this is on our heads?
Do you know if SETI has pointed their telescope array towards the Pleiades?
Yeah, well, they won't get anything because there's no life there. And we were told this from, you know, our scientists know there's no life there. See, and we're not good. This is the thing that drove me nuts about SETI. It's like, you guys want to do all this kind of cute, cryptic stuff with your fancy tech. Will you please just look through this telescope? I know you want to be the ones to discover it, and you've got your scenarios.
Sure.
And, you know, Jill Tarter, Professor Dr. Jill Tarter, oh, we want the help of the public. I've sent stuff to them. They simply won't look.
Now, Billy's visitors are 80 light years beyond the Pleiades, aren't they?
That's right. So it said, this is where I go into that, you know, according to the information in the case. I can stand behind what I've read to you here because I've read this stuff as far back as 1986. you know, and here's the beauty. People say, well, how do we know if the originals aren't there, George? How do we know? I said, all you have to do is go into these documents, find out the outside date that they appeared on the Internet, and look in there and see the events that happened since they've been published. Now, here's one that people will really gag over. That 1987 document where he's foretelling, you know, all this stuff about Islam. The World Trade Center attack is in there, too. The Russian military movements, the very city they moved their troops to in 2011, was published in that document in 1987. The Ebola epidemic, not an outbreak, the epidemic was foretold.
Anytime you want to get this published, we'll put it on our website for you, Michael. Anytime.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to take you up on that, and I'm going to work on composing something for this because, George, I'll tell you, this is something I wanted to say to you for a while because you hear a lot of stuff, you go through a lot of stuff, and you've hosted me on your show many times. I see you as someone who could be a true leader with this. I don't expect anybody to abandon everything they do, but when we find the truth, when truth prevails, that's why I called my new film that, when truth prevails, we make a place for it to be seen. We can't force people. We don't proselytize. We're not telling you, don't join anything. Nobody has to send money to Billy. We've got free stuff up the wazoo. If you don't want to buy films, it's fine. You can read all this stuff. And I'm going to prepare it for you, for the show, for your site. Give me a couple days.
You got it.
Wake up after this.
You got it.
And I will, anybody that writes, I respond, whatever we can do.
Michael, where can people right now watch When Truth Prevails?
Well, it's I put up a link. It's on your site. It says, and did they listen? It's the video link. That goes to a special
offer. That'll take you to it. Okay, great.
Yeah, and there's a click there for the downloadable version.
Okay.
And then there's an offer for two DVDs.
We make it easy for everybody. Michael, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk more about the prophecies and predictions of Billy Meyer. Michael Horn with us. And it's an hour where we'll take your calls, too. Next.